Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Thursday morning, the Supreme Court has heard arguments on President Obama's health care law, and we will talk about it the first hour of our program today. We have done so many programs on health care. I feel like the past, the present, and the future are all intertwined during this hour. We'll have two guests with us. And we'll do that momentarily. We're already getting phone calls for people who would like to comment on this because it is a very important issue for all of us. But this is also an important issue for us. I'm Kathleen Dunn, Rhonda Fanning joining me in our studios in Milwaukee. And we are relying on listener contributions to pay for all of these programs that you hear, the discussions on these vital issues that you need to hear and enjoy on the Ideas Network. It's our spring membership drive, and we're asking you to take action by becoming a contributor to WPR. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. Last hour, they had a goal of 60 pledges, and they heard from 36 listeners. So thank you to all of those who pledged last hour. Our goal this hour is to get 45 pledges. Help us meet this important goal by making your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift ensures that the programs you enjoy will be here each and every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is one of these issues next hour that we have been talking about for a long time now, and we have done it pretty thoroughly, healthcare reform. We know that you want more than a headline. We go in depth on the issues that matter to you. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have something very special going on this drive. If you pledge any amount, you're going to be entered into a drawing. It's a trip for two on a garden tour of London and the surrounding areas with WPR host Larry Mueller. You can find out the details and make your pledge online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, health care reform with Greg Storr, who covered the Supreme Court for Bloomberg News since 1998. Philip Klein, senior editorial writer for the Washington Examiner, who will give us an outline of what's been happening in the Supreme Court, what they're doing right now, where we go from here, and we'll be hearing your opinions on all of this as well. Important conversation. Please give your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Also during this membership drive, we'd like to say thank you for your support in a special way. When you pledge at the $120 level for WPR programs, you can choose a thank you gift that will provide 40 meals to a Wisconsin food bank in your own community.
This is a terrific idea. You can let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to those people who are in need in your community. Pledge $120, choose food for 40 as your thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. You tell us your name, your contact information, and how much you want to give and how you would like to pay. You can consider using a credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and you can put your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, please take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking, Rhonda, for 44 more pledges in the next 55 minutes or so. Please help out now. It's important that you do so. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give $120 or more, and you can request that Food for 40 as your thank you gift, providing meals to those in need in your area. Last year, WPR listeners gave more than 71,000 meals across the state. That is amazing. So let's try to do that again, or maybe even go higher than that.
That would be wonderful. And for your pledge of any amount, you'll be entered in that drawing for a trip for two on a garden tour of London and the vicinity. Get the details and enter now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ashley from Rice Lake pledged last hour, and she said, I've increasingly found myself saying, I heard on WPR that. So I figured it's about time that I contribute. Thanks for keeping me informed and entertained. There are so many of those comments that come through. So many conversations start that way. Did you hear on WPR?
I know. I do that all the time. Don't you? today on the show.
Right. A lot of dinner conversations had discussing WPR programs that day. So please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks so much, Rhonda. And it's an important conversation that we've been having all week and we've had here for years, actually, and that's healthcare in this country, a system that is broken, an attempt to fix the system that is broken, and now Supreme Court looking at the fix to the problem and whether or not it is constitutional. This just goes on and on and on, doesn't it? As you know, the Supreme Court heard the argument, 6.5 hours of argument over the past 3 days. We have two guests with us this hour, plus we'll welcome your phone calls. They will talk about what happened in the Supreme Court, and one of our guests is very much opposed to the Obama health care plan, so we'll hear his concerns about this, and we'll welcome your phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 for you to join in on the conversation. Greg Storr is our first guest. Greg covered the Supreme Court for Bloomberg News since 1998. He took a year off along the way to write a book on the court's 2003 affirmative action case. The book is A Black and White Case, How Affirmative Action Survived Its Greatest Legal Challenge. And we thank you very much for being with us, Greg.
Good to be here, Kathleen.
I think some people were surprised, and tell me if you shared the surprise, that the Supreme Court came down, many of the judges, pretty hard on the Obama health care plan. Was that anticipated or not?
I think that is fair to say that a lot of people were surprised. Certainly going in, people knew that Justices Kennedy and Chief Justice Roberts were probably the two key justices to watch. But their questions were disproportionately aimed at the federal government lawyer, Don Verrilli. I counted up on the main issue that three-quarters of Roberts' questions were aimed at Don Verrilli. And so I think the lopsided nature of that did take a lot of people by surprise.
And would it be fair to say that most of the other justices, other than Roberts and Kennedy, seem to have a pretty clear opinion of where they're going on this, or are we going to be surprised?
I think that is fair to say. Justice Thomas never speaks, but his opinions speak very loudly in this area. We're pretty confident he will vote to overturn. Justices Scalia and Alito in their questions, very clear that they were likely to vote to overturn it, and the four Democratic-appointed justices all suggested strongly that they were inclined to vote to uphold it.
Do you think the White House, when this bill was crafted, and heavens knows it took forever to craft this bill and pass it, had any idea that this was down the road?
It's so hard to sort of think back a couple of years like that,
right.
but there was, you know, the sense that the law might actually be struck down was not something that was there 2 years ago, certainly among in Democratic circles. It sort of gained credence as time went on, as lower courts started, some of them started saying, yes, we believe it's unconstitutional. I think if you had gone back and asked the White House, would you have believed you'd come to this point, they would have been very, very surprised 2 years
mm-hmm.
ago.
Was there any kind of debate about constitutionality when we passed Social Security in this country, which seems to me to be even more contentious an issue?
That did make it up to the Supreme Court. Keep in mind that was at a time when the Supreme Court was striking down big parts of the New Deal, and up until 1936, it looked like the court would just keep going in that direction. After the 1936 presidential election, the court moved in the other direction in what people call the switch in time that saved nine, because President Roosevelt had proposed adding more justices to the court to give him a favorable result. So these issues certainly have, that's the closest parallel to what we have right now, although in that case it was multiple cases rather than just the one big one.
The court seemed to be talking a lot about freedom the last 3 days. There was not a huge emphasis on precedent, was there?
No, there really wasn't. And there was a point during Tuesday's arguments when I thought to myself, wow, they haven't actually mentioned any prior cases, up until this point in the argument. There was some discussion of freedom, probably most importantly from Justice Anthony Kennedy, who, could be the deciding vote here, and for whom individual liberty is an extremely important concept, perhaps even the paramount concept. And I think it's fair to say that if he views this case as one about individual liberty, liberty. If that's ultimately how he comes out, then the law is going to be struck down.
And that means what? Liberty to not buy something?
Correct. The concern is that the conservative justices expressed was that this law, for the first time, is making some people buy something, and they are forcing them into commerce, and that did seem to resonate with some of them, in particular, as I said, Justice Kennedy.
It's hard to believe that there wouldn't be some kind of precedent here, that this would be for the first time forcing you to buy something.
Well, that is, you know, I was hoping when I said that I was, you know, it was the conservative perspective. The supporters of the law would say that it is not unprecedented in quite this way. There are certainly examples of things the government does make individuals do. You have to register for the Selective Service. You have to file a tax return. Back in the 18th century, there was a requirement to be prepared to join a militia. So you know, whether it's unprecedented probably depends on whose perspective we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. What happens now? They're getting together to look at all of this today and tomorrow?
They have a private conference tomorrow, and typically what happens is they take a vote then. And if the Chief Justice is in the majority, he will then assign somebody to write the opinion. He may well take it himself if he's in the majority. And over the next 3 months, we in the public won't hear anything, but there will be back and forth among the justices over those opinions. And you know that the vote that takes place tomorrow may be final, but at times justices do, switch sides when they read the opinion drafts.
I know there will be an attempt on the part of you and the many, many, many other reporters who are covering this to find out how the Supreme Court is going to vote tomorrow. Is it really a very, very, very tightly kept secret?
That may be the thing that really makes the Supreme Court unique in this town, is that it is very much a leak-proof institution. they do a remarkable job of not letting word of their decisions get out before they happen. I don't have any reason to suspect that this case will be any different.
Let's go to some phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Lisa in Marshfield, hi.
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 My question is, if they overturn health care reform on the grounds that it's unconstitutional, does that mean we can stop paying for car insurance in Wisconsin? Because that's also mandated.
The answer is, if you're looking to not have to pay for your car insurance, unfortunately, no, that's not the case. And there's basically two reasons for that, the biggest of which is this is a case about the power of Congress. It's not a case about what a state can make you do. It may well be that after this case, in fact, it will probably be the case, that there will be nothing keeping a state from enacting a very similar health care plan, because this is all about the constitutional powers of Congress. And then the second point there is one of the arguments as to why car insurance is different is that the people opposed to the health care law would say you have a choice not to buy a car, and you have that notion of liberty is not quite there.
Thank you, Lisa, for the call. Brad is next. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. Yes, the idea for the mandate that everybody has to buy insurance was introduced by the Republicans, actually, back in 1993 with the Heritage Foundation, Orrin Hatch, Robert Dole, and Mitt Romney actually included it in RomneyCare in Massachusetts. Don't you find it ironic that now the Republicans are saying that the mandate is totally wrong, is unconstitutional? Don't you think that they're doing this and making this argument just for political reasons to undermine President Obama for the election this fall?
That is certainly a point that you hear many, many times from the Democratic side and the supporters of the law. And although I think the folks at the Heritage Foundation would say that the mandate they originally talked about was different from what the mandate that ended up being enacted in this law, there no doubt is a certain element of truth to that. My sense of the Supreme Court justices, even though they may oppose the law on policy grounds, if they end up striking it down, they will believe that they are doing it because it's their reading of the Constitution rather than the politics of it.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit more about the politics of this. It is, the Supreme Court justices have to know that they were in the middle of an election year, and this, of course, has perhaps very significant political ramifications. Why didn't they wait on this case?
Well, they still can wait. The short answer to that question is that everybody was asking them to take up the case, including the federal government. Mm. We had lower courts that were divided on it. And all those factors tend to be things that, in any case, would cause the court to say we need to jump in. Now, there is a way that they cannot decide the case. They didn't seem very interested in that. That was the argument on the first day that involved something called the Anti-Injunction Act, which is a law that says if you're challenging a tax, you have to wait until the tax is imposed before you challenge it. And one option for the court could be that they say that the penalties in the health care law are taxes under the Anti-Injunction Act, and therefore we have to wait until 2015 to rule on this case. That's an option to not get involved in this political political issue. But they did not seem very interested in that on Monday, and I think it would be a surprise to most people if they ended up going that route.
Well, it's unfortunate, no matter what side you're on this whole issue, is that it is such a highly political issue now. And it started out as being a conversation long overdue in the country about how to get health insurance for people who have been devastated by not having insurance, pre-existing conditions, trying to tackle the huge cost of health care in this country. Everybody seemed to have had the best of intentions, and look what happens.
I can't argue with that. It is very, very striking, as one of the previous callers alluded to, that this law passed with no Republican votes, may be struck down by a 5-4 Supreme Court decision where the 5 Republican appointees vote to strike it down, the 4 Democratic appointees vote to uphold it. As I said, I think all the justices will say, I'm doing it because that's how I read the Constitution. But it's going to be very, people are going to be talking a lot about how the decision may be based on politics rather than the substance.
We'll take more phone calls in just a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. As you can tell from our guest, he's been closely examining the Supreme Court for a long time and knows what's been going on the last 3 days. Greg Storr is our guest, Supreme Court reporter for Bloomberg News. He's been covering the court since 1998. He is the author of A Black and White Case, How Affirmative Action Survived Its Greatest Legal Challenge. Our phone lines, there's one line open now, 800-486-8655. I remind you that we are in a pledge drive, and today is my last day to ask for your support for this program. As I said earlier, think about the past, the present, and the future on this issue, and how we have done our best to inform you for a long time now on health care reform in this country. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552, or you can go to WPR.org. And we thank you very much for your pledge. We'll continue with your calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls. Our lines are flooded here this morning. Dave in Caledonia. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Part of the argument I heard on the radio and on TV was that this is just changing the point where people do pay for the insurance. I mean, if people show up at the emergency room or a doctor, I believe there's federal laws where the people have to be treated. So care is mandated, and we just pay for everyone else who has insurance is paying higher rates for the people uninsured now. Are they going to consider that argument? I heard it made, but it wasn't emphasized.
It was certainly made more than once by the Solicitor General Don Verrilli. The general counter to that from the conservative justices was that what you just described, it was, as they put it, a problem of the government's own making. In other words, the law does require hospitals to accept people who need emergency treatment, when they come in, even if they don't have the means to pay for it. And the new health care law also requires insurance companies to take people with pre-existing conditions. And the conservative justices seem to be of the view that that cost that, that is imposed there is not something that you can pay for by making the young, healthy people buy insurance. If it's a cost that we as a society want to incur, we have to incur it as a group, not by, as at least one of them put it, conscripting individual people.
Let's imagine that this whole thing goes down. Does it make it easier for a public option to be put on the table, which, from what I've been hearing, would not face a constitutional challenge, or does it make it more difficult?
It would not, as a legal matter, it would not make it more difficult. You know, the politics of this whole thing are probably well beyond my capacity to sort through.
You and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, whatever happens, whatever the Supreme Court decides, it's going to be a big political issue. But if the Supreme Court strikes it down, one would think then that then we don't have this sort of health care coverage that, you know, for people with pre-existing conditions and things like that, and there are still tens of millions of people uninsured, and that will be a political issue in the fall campaign. You know, one can imagine we will have a debate in the presidential election as to whether a single-payer system is something that we should put in place.
Yeah. Laura in Madison, hi.
Well, that's exactly why I called, because I don't hear anybody offering any alternatives. This has been a real third rail kind of an issue, yet our coverage rates continue to rise as much as 20% in a year for many people, and yet for some reason people are crying over, you know, they want to impeach the president over 10 cents a gallon gas increases, yet health care, for some reason, I just don't understand the public's lack of interest in this.
You know, one point I might make is that up until recently, the White House has not made this into a big political issue. They have not tried to make this an issue where they are arguing that we have put in place something good. Now, in the past few weeks, they've started to do that a little bit more. But, you know, criticism that people have lodged at the White House is that they didn't give a more robust defense of this law for the very, you know,
right,
for the very reasons that the caller just described.
Right. They probably would have done it differently now.
They may well have done it differently. You know, it's always you know, hard to you know, sort of, you know, do that second guessing, certainly, if you look at the opinion polls on this issue, the public remains very, very divided. I think back to maybe a year ago when there were a lot of predictions. Maybe 2 years ago, a lot of predictions that this law would become more popular as people started to see some of the benefits of it, like the requirement that insurance companies, if you have an adult child under 26. That they have to keep that child on the policy,
right?
And that people would, that the law would become more popular because people would start to realize those benefits and not want to lose those benefits. The polls don't indicate that has happened for whatever reason.
Boy, you talk to people who have kids under 26, though, and I know some of them, and they're delighted that has happened. It's been very important for their families.
I'm sure that it is, the White House of late has really started trying to point out those benefits. I'm not sure that has resonated with the broader public yet.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thanks, Laura. Robert in Green Bay. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. 2 points. One is we can't participate in any form of banking or currency without the federal government participating in that act of commerce, so that is highly regulated by the government. And the second question is, do you anticipate a far-reaching decision like Citizens United? I know also under this decision is the funding of Medicare at the state level. Is it possible that the court could say that the states are not responsible for Medicare? The government has no business being involved in that.
Yeah, it's Medicaid, I believe, isn't it?
It is Medicaid, yes. And Kathleen, I couldn't hear the first part of the question, so I may have to ask you to...
Yeah, would you reiterate that, Robert?
Sure. I was just pointing out that we cannot, as citizens, participate in banking or any form of currency without federal government involvement. So that is also another limited area of commerce that we have to work through the federal government rules and regulations.
Okay, thank you, Robert. We heard you better, I think. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. Let me sort of start with the second part of it. You know, this has the potential to be a very far-reaching ruling. You know, one big question is how much, if they strike down the insurance requirement, how much of the law they strike down. And, you know, they could well strike down the entire thing based on the arguments yesterday. That's by no means a guarantee, but that's very possible. There was also a second part of the argument that we haven't talked about, or, you know, third or fourth part of the argument, directly involving the Medicaid expansion. And the legal issue there is whether the federal government, through the health care law, was unconstitutionally coercing the states into spending their own money on Medicaid by threatening to withhold federal money from the states if they didn't expand their rules. And if the court were to agree with that decision, that could be a really big new constraint on the power of Congress, because up until now, Congress has basically had very, very few limits on its ability to put conditions on federal funds and to impose national policies using its constitutional spending power.
Two final questions from me, and then we need to pledge for a while. Okay. Does the Supreme Court think about, because they're going to be hit hard with this, you decided the election in 2000, you did Citizens United, you are highly partisan, highly political, you're supposed to be above the political fray, and look what you've done again. Does it damage, as many have suggested, the Supreme Court as being, you know, above petty politics? Hello? He's gone. I guess we'll leave that question to our next guest. Darn. Thank you, Greg. Oh no. Okay, he did hear that. All right. Did you hear that question?
I think I heard enough of it.
Okay, you got the gist.
The answer is I think they are very cognizant of it, and some of them just care more than others. I, you know, Chief Justice Roberts has given every indication that he cares an awful lot about the prestige of the institution, he is no doubt very aware of how this decision will be perceived. I'm sure he's very, very aware of how the campaign finance decision from a couple years ago was perceived. And that may not change the outcome of it, but it is certainly in the minds of at least some of the justices.
Yeah. Well, you are a wealth of information. Thank you so much, Greg. I hope you'll join us again and soon.
Very much enjoyed it.
Thanks. Greg Storer, Supreme Court reporter for Bloomberg News, been covering the court since 1998. And you can tell from his expertise, he's the author of A Black and White Case, How Affirmative Action Survived Its Greatest Legal Challenge. We'll hear from a guest who is very opposed to the Obama health care law in just a moment. First, though, what we're doing now is also really important to us so we can have these kinds of conversations. Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios, and more than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio for intelligent discussions. Discussions like these, this is an election year. We have discussions where you can get involved and discuss issues of great importance with terrific guests. We rely on the money that you give us to keep these conversations on the air. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to help pay for the programs you depend on. And Kathleen, we're looking for about another 34 more pledges in the next 26 minutes. So please make yours now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make yourself feel extra good. Maybe you have found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've heard one of our shows. Maybe you feel that you're particularly well-informed on issues like healthcare, which you ought to be if you listen to us with any regularity. You hear multiple points of view. You value what you hear on the Ideas Network. Pledge your support, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you can make yourself feel extra good about your donation to WPR this pledge drive. If you give $10 a month or more, as a thank you gift, 40 meals will be provided to those in need through area food banks and your own community. Just choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen in the car, many of you, and Wisconsin Public Radio comes on every time you start up your car. It's a sign that it's time to donate.
Or because you hit your Or that means WPR is your main radio station. Yes. You're glad that we're listener supported.
It your donation makes the programs that you enjoy possible, of course, uninterrupted by commercials. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, and another 33 pledges in the next 23 minutes. So thanks to everyone who's pledged this hour. And if you haven't yet, please go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much, Rhonda. Thank you. And please pledge for programs like these. It's the meat, the heart of what we do every single day. We take our responsibility pretty seriously. And I think on issues like healthcare, we give you a wealth of information. So you come to this current Supreme Court debate well-informed by all of the issues. Philip Klein is joining us now, and we'll continue our phone calls. Philip is senior writer for the Washington Examiner. He was Washington correspondent for the American Spectator before that and also worked as a financial reporter at Reuters in New York. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And Philip, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's say that this goes down, the health care law. What are we going to do about health care in this country? What kind of debate will ensue?
Well, I think that if I'm a conservative, and I've been writing for a long time about health care and believe that Republicans have to have a proactive agenda.
Yes.
Rather than just a reactive agenda. And I think that there are a lot of things that could be done to help healthcare. Now, if we look at it in the big picture view, there are basically the central problem with healthcare in this country is the escalating costs. And if you could contain the growth in costs in healthcare, then a lot of the other problems are a lot easier to address. And so there are two basic visions of how to control costs. Democrats believe that there are fundamental inefficiencies and problems in the healthcare market, that it functions differently than other markets, and that we, in order to fix things, we need more government intervention. But conservatives see that there's a very messy healthcare system based on a lot of government policies, and we need to move to a system in which the healthcare system functions a lot more like other markets. If I wanted to know, if I landed in Milwaukee and wanted to figure out where to, go out to a restaurant that night, I'd have a million avenues on the internet, books, things that I can do to try to figure out what restaurant to go to in my price range. If I moved to Milwaukee tomorrow and wanted to find out a good doctor, it would be much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a problem. And I think that another problem in the healthcare system is that because everything is rooted, basically like 95% of the people who have insurance get it either through their employers or through the government. And because the perception is that somebody else is ultimately paying, whether it's an insurance company, your employer, or government, people don't have an incentive to engage in the typical sort of consumer price discrimination and shopping around for the best price that exists in any other market. So the conservative vision is all based on things that we can do to try to make it function more like a consumer market. And there's no reason if people shop for all sorts of other things that we can't have more choice and more competition for healthcare. There's no reason why I should just be forced to buy the one insurance company that my employer decides that they want to have. If I want a different insurance policy, if I want to maybe, pocket more salary and be able to buy a different insurance policy because I'm young and healthy and don't have as many medical costs, I don't have that option because of the way the system's structured. So what does that mean in sort of technical reforms that can actually be done? The biggest thing is to reform the tax code, which basically, due to a tax code, all of our all of our health care gets routed through the employer, because there's a tax advantage for getting your health care through the employer that individuals don't enjoy. And the problem with that is that if you lose your job, you lose your health care.
Right.
If you change jobs, you lose. You may have to change your health insurance policies. So you want something that's portable. You can move to job if you lose your job to job and still enjoy the same tax advantages. It's a much more efficient way. And there's another reason why moving to that sort of system where the health insurance policy sticks with the individual is much better. And it's that insurance companies would have a much more of an interest in incentivizing healthy behavior. One of the biggest drivers of healthcare costs are behavioral driven. If people ate healthier, exercised more, took care of themselves, didn't smoke, do all the things that are obvious to us, then we'd have lower healthcare costs in this country. The problem is that insurers right now, under the current insurance model, they figure somebody's going to be on one insurance company, they're going to switch jobs soon, and they're going to be on another insurance company. So insurance industry doesn't have much incentive for that person's long-term health. But if it were like car insurance, where basically insurers were competing to not only get somebody as their customer, but to maintain them as a customer for decades, then suddenly they say, okay, we're in this for the long haul. We're going to be able to change prices that reflect things that encourage and incentivize healthier behavior. If you smoke, if you don't smoke, if you eat healthy, if you keep your blood pressure. I mean, there are so many things that, for instance, in Safeway is a business that is able to self-insure. And at that company, they've created a program where essentially if you can get 20% off on your insurance if you exhibit certain healthier behaviors. And if you, let's say, are overweight and you lose weight, you can get a refund. And that their healthcare costs have been flat, where a lot of other companies in similar spaces have seen their healthcare costs skyrocket. And I think that's what we need to do.
All right, let's talk about the Supreme Court here for a moment. Do you have significant problems with the individual mandate?
Yes, I think it's definitely unconstitutional, and it would be an unprecedented use of government power that would basically mean that there are no limits to the power of Congress.
And do you think that it's going to become a very political issue if this goes down? The second part of that question is, do you think that Mitt Romney, who in all likelihood will be the candidate, whose Massachusetts bill, from shows we've done, the federal government fashioned their bill on that bill, is going to run into a problem taking on this issue, which is going to be front and center if the Supreme Court has a decision?
As somebody who's a conservative on health care, I've been very critical of Mitt Romney and his health care plan. However, if this is struck down, it's actually a gift to him, because basically the key thing to keep in mind here is that states have certain powers that the federal government does not. The reason why a state could institute an individual mandate is that the state has general police power. The federal government does not have general police power. What the federal government is trying to do is they're trying to justify this under the Commerce Clause. The problem is that somebody who's sitting at home, who doesn't have health insurance, is not engaging in commerce. So what they're trying to do is have an unprecedented interpretation of the Commerce Clause, which is that we have to force individuals into commerce in order to regulate them. And that's never been done before in any prior Supreme Court case. And if that, and the reason why the government had such a problem in oral arguments this week is that in over 2 years, they have not been able to determine what's referred to as a limiting principle. In other words, if the court upholds the mandate, what limits are there still on government's power under the Commerce Clause? And there are none. And that's what the 11th Circuit found, and I think there's a good chance, based on the oral arguments, that that's what the Supreme Court is going to find.
Right.
Because there's no reason to say, if health care is this unique market and, your actions, by doing nothing, you're imposing costs on others, then why not, as the examples often give, why not force people to exercise? You know, we were just talking about healthcare costs. There's no doubt that if I smoke and drink and, you know, eat red meat every day and bacon cheeseburgers, that I'm posing more of a risk of, I'm at a higher risk for posing greater health care costs in society than somebody who exercises and eats vegetables and so forth. So why shouldn't the government be allowed to force you to join a gym and have an exercise regimen, given that it's imposing health care costs and the health care market is unique? There's really no way that a court could, based on the principle that would be established if the mandate is upheld, say that that would be unconstitutional.
Let's go to phone calls. We have tons of them. Matt in La Crosse. Hi. Matt, are you there? Hello, Matt. All right. Dolores in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Kathleen?
Yes. Hi, Dolores.
Okay. I just really am concerned about this whole health care law. I really don't understand why we can't have single payer. To me, it makes more sense. I don't know about the mandates, but why can't we do something like Common Ground here in Milwaukee is doing? They're trying to do a co-op based so that it's run by the people instead of by the government. So it's cooperative. I don't know if you're familiar with what they're trying to do.
Actually, I just had lunch with a friend yesterday who was telling me about that. We're going to be doing a show on it eventually. What about single payer? It wouldn't be unconstitutional.
No, I don't think single payer would be unconstitutional, but I think it would be both bad, and also it wouldn't work in America. And I think the reason why the short answer is that, you know, like I said, I think that the way to approach the healthcare system is to move more in a market-based direction. The single payer systems, the idea is that the government has a lot of control over what can and can't be spent on, and people end up getting denied care. There's a reason why, for a lot of surgeries, Canadians have to come to America because there's endless waiting lists to get on the surgery. And I just don't think that Americans who, you know, it's a country that sues people over cups of coffee being too hot is going to be told that, you know, allow stand for some government bureaucrat telling you, well, you're going to have to wait 2 years for a hip surgery. I just don't think that Americans are going to stand for that. So I just don't think it's a realistic a way to go. And let's keep in mind that single payer keeps costs down by rationing health care to the sick. And that's the reality. It's not a humane system. It's an egalitarian system, but that's not necessarily always humane.
And yet, Philip, there are so many countries on Earth that have exactly that kind of system and feel that it's much more humane than our system.
They're not Americans, and Americans have a different concept of human liberty than other countries. And maybe in other countries, people feel comfortable with the government telling them that, sorry, but we can't afford to keep you alive for more than 6 months, so we're not going to pay for your medical care. But Americans just have a different view of things than other countries.
Matt, Matt, you weren't there. Deborah, thank you very much for the call, and we will be doing a show on what you talked about down the road. Deb in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, folks. This is really a sad topic, but I want to point out the woman who filed for bankruptcy, and among her debts, medical debts, were listed, and she was one of the main plaintiffs in one of the original states' challenges to the mandated law. And, I mean, this falls under the category of when irony dies, the world will end. Fortunately for her, her medical bills were only, or I should say fortunately for us, her medical bills were only $4,500 that she listed. However, that could have been $450,000 that she listed. And I would hate to see any fellow American, left, right, or center, go bankrupt because they didn't have health insurance. But it happens in this country hundreds of thousands of times a year. In fact, it's the main cause of bankruptcy. And I'm silly enough to believe that we're all in this experiment called America together, and that as the people, we will do what's right. And what is right is to treat people that show up at the emergency room and to give them health care. And so since we have chosen to do that, and since we said, if you can't afford it, we'll help you pay for it, I don't see that there's anything much more egalitarian than that, because rather than take some satisfaction in a story like this, I really find it heartbreaking.
Philip.
Yeah, I mean, she raised a number of points, but I just want to address the one because it's so central to this argument, which is the idea that people get sick and they show up in an emergency room and it imposes costs on everyone. And that's one of the main justifications for the mandate in court. The problem is that's not really what the mandate was created to do. The mandate was created so that because they wanted to force insurers to cover people with pre-existing conditions at a reasonable cost by not charging them more than healthier patient beneficiaries. Because they did that, they had to force healthy people into the insurance market, because if not, then healthy people are going to say, well, if insurers have to cover me, I just won't get insurance, and if I come down with something, they can't refuse me. And the insurance market collapses, if we've seen in a number of states. That's why they instituted the mandate, so that healthy people could, so they can coerce healthy people and conscript healthy people into this market to try to pay for the sick. Now, you may say that that's ethical, you know, ethical, but that clearly is a different purpose than the idea of the emergency room visits. And a point that that was made is that that the opponents of the law made is that the only people that are imposing costs in society are people who default on their medical debts. Those are the only people who show up at the emergency room and don't pay their bills. That's not all the uninsured people. A lot of uninsured people will pay their medical bills. A lot of uninsured people don't ever have to go to an emergency room. They're treating all people as if they're the same class of people that are showing up at emergency rooms. And another point that Chief Justice Roberts made was that the idea is that, you know, the mandate doesn't just cover mandate that people get emergency care. The mandate mandates that you have minimum essential coverage, which includes all sorts of other things.
All right. And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We have to pledge, Philip. I'm sorry. We just got to do it. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks.
Right.
I appreciate your
point
of view. Philip Klein, senior writer for the Washington Examiner, as we look at the important hearings, arguments taking place before the Supreme Court. As you probably know, we're in our spring membership drive, and we need you to keep programs like this one on the air. Please make a gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking to get 31, wow, that jumped up a couple, pledges in the next 7 minutes or so. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Doesn't get more important than health care and the conversation that we just had. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and all of the hours that will follow this conversation, because this obviously is going to go on for some time. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day and make your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. This thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your local communities. For more information about Food for 40 or to make your pledge, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Yeah, I love that program. Listener support is such a big part of why this program is available to you right now. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Chances are the Ideas Network has covered an issue close to you, whether it's healthcare like today, mm-hmm. state issues, national issues, technology, science, literature, history.
You got it.
We try to bring you shows that you'll find relevant, interesting, and sometimes entertaining. Because WPR touches your life, please make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you if you've given already. If not, you need to help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. now. It's important for us to meet our goals, and we like to do it with meaty subjects like the one you just heard. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you support WPR, you're supporting the Wisconsin idea to bring the resources of the university to the entire state. Not every state has such an idea, and not every state has the high-quality programs that you enjoy daily on WPR.
WPR is really one of the great things about Wisconsin. So many listeners say that. It's something to take pride in. Join forces with many other people in Wisconsin right now and make a contribution. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we all know how time flies, and maybe it's been longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR. We're asking you to keep your membership active.
You may want to think of your support of WPR like you think of a newspaper or a magazine subscription, something that you renew every year. Renew your gift to WPR right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can pledge through the news. We're still looking for 31 pledges in the next 6 minutes. So please go online, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks to everyone who's already pledged this hour.
Yes, thank you so much. And remember, $120 is a nice amount to pledge, and you can request Food for 40 as a thank you gift, which is also a really nice thing to do. So Food for 40, WPR, makes it a really good day, I think.
You win twice.
You feel good, and I hope you'll feel good again tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Rhonda, for all of your terrific work. And thanks, everybody, for being such a lively, informed, intelligent audience. We want to thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, Chris Molina for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks for your pledges.